Welcome to Madrid en Inglés, Madrid in English, a tour, a colorful educational tour of our capital, Madrid, and of our province, La Comunidad de Madrid. Learn English with me, with Richard Vaughn, using Madrid as our base of operations. Yeah, let's go. Hello, good morning, everybody. How are you today? Welcome to a new program. Every Sunday morning, I'm here. Every Sunday morning. Every week. Week after week. Month after month. And maybe, who knows, maybe year after year. It depends on how long I live. But in any case, today is a special day. Today isn't just any Sunday. Hoy no es un domingo cualquiera. Today isn't just any Sunday, it's my Sunday because I'm on the air on Onda Madrid, Telemadrid Radio. I'm here to talk to you in English. This program is called Madrid en Inglés. Madrid in English, and my job is to talk about Madrid, the city, the province. I like the Madrid province, and Spain, and the world, and myself, my life in Madrid. I'm using my life in Madrid as a timeline for this radio show, more or less. I go off on many tangents. Salir por la tangente en inglés significa to go off. O-F-A, doble F-A. To go off or get off. Ambos nos valen. Go or get. To get off on a tangent, to go off. Me gusta más go. To go off on a tangent, I go off on many tangents because my objective is not necessarily to talk about Madrid. My objective is to talk about Madrid as a pretext to expose you to English. Killing two birds with one stone. Onda Madrid, se habla de Madrid, of course. This radio station is devoted to Madrid, and this radio station is financed by the citizens of the community of Madrid. So this radio station exists thanks to you. Gracias a ustedes y a vosotros. Thanks to you. This radio station exists and it can be financed by Madrid taxpayers. En inglés, para decir contribuyente, se dice sencillamente pagador de impuestos, taxpayer. No suena mal en inglés, decir taxpayer. Me gusta más la palabra contribuyente, contributors. But in the English language, we say taxpayers. The people who support the government of Madrid, the people who support the city and the province of Madrid. It's basically the private sector, which is the generator of the wealth that makes everything possible. But in any case, here I am to speak in English to you with the hope, con la esperanza, with the hope of helping you slowly but surely, sin prisa pero sin pausa, slowly but surely consolidate a greater command of the English language. Me gusta la palabra command. También se dice a greater mastery, un mayor dominio, un mayor comanda, command. Me gustan los dos, mastery. And command means dominio. To gain a greater command of the English language. Listening to me. Because if you understand English well, then that's 70% of the solution. The other 30% is speaking as well as possible, but the priority is always understanding. So here we are on another Sunday. Another Sunday. Yes, sir. A Sunday in the month of April. Yes, April. Fíjense, fijaos. In la pronunciación de abril in inglés. Many Spanish learners of English say abril. Abril. No. What's the first letter in the English alphabet? A. So, A. Pro. Pro. Como si fuera casi una U. Prul, no. April. 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 Apron. Apron, escrito apron es delantal. Mi delantal de abril, my April apron. April, y también lápiz es, no es pencil. It's pencil, ceseo, no ceseo. Pencil. Los lápices de abril, the April pencils. Okay. Un poco de fonética. A little bit of phonetics. A little bit, just a little bit, just a little bit of phonetics. 1988. Last week I spoke about 1987. I am slowly moving through my life in Spain and in Madrid. In 1988, where was I? What was I doing? Where was I living? Yes. Pasado. How do you say? The pasado continuo. Donde estaba viviendo, donde, etc. Well, I was living in the Barrio de la Concepción, very near the park, what's called the Parque Calero. And very near. During that time, they were building the La Mezquita, La M30, El Tanatorio, La M30, in that area, relatively near that area. Virgen del Val was the name, is the name of the street. My children still live there on that street. And I was living in a house of 96 square meters. Very comfortable. Small, but very comfortable. Perfect, to tell you the truth. And my children grew up in that house. Modest, humble, mi humilde morada, my humble abode, escrito abode para mi morada, my humble abode. And it's good because I didn't want my children to grow up with a silver spoon in their mouths. To grow up or to be born, ¿se dice nacer o criarse? To be born is nacer. No existe el verbo nacer en inglés, es ser dado a luz, o ser parido, literalmente. To bear, como la palabra oso, escrito bear, pero como verbo. To bear es aguantar, soportar, pero también dar a luz. O parir. To bear. To bear children. Yes. Bear, pasado simple, bore, escrito bore, y luego participio, born. I was born. Yo fui dado a luz, parido, etc. I was born. Así se dice, yo nací. To be born with a silver spoon in your mouth. Or to grow up, criarse, to grow up with a silver spoon in your mouth, cuchara de plata en la boca, means en un entorno de familia rica. O sea, criarse dentro de forma muy acomodada. That's to be born with a silver spoon in your mouth, or to grow up with a silver spoon in your mouth. Now, I was not rich. I was in the 1980s. But I could have bought a bigger house, a nicer house, and I decided against it. And so I stayed in Barrio Concepción, which is a nice area, really. I like it. And I wanted my children to grow up there, you know, middle-class neighborhood with a middle-class upbringing, with the middle-class values, etc. And so I stayed there in that house until 1998, I believe. Si mal no recuerdo. Esta expresión en español, si mal no recuerdo, o si no recuerdo mal. In English we say, if I remember right. Somos más positivos. Si recuerdo bien, if I remember right. Yes, then until 1998, so for a long time. I've lived in 34 houses in my life. And that flat on Virgen de la Street is where I have lived the longest. From 1984 to 1998. It's 14 years. That's the longest I have lived in a single unit or in a single house or flat or apartment. The longest. The second longest, I don't know. But in any case, I was living there. My wife took my children every morning to school. Well, in 1988, my son was 4 and my daughter was 8. Well, my son turned 4 and my daughter turned 8 in 1988. But my son was still at home. He didn't, my My wife and I didn't take our children to daycare centers or nursery schools. The expression nursery is guardería, and daycare center is guardería infantil. O sea, centros de cuidados diurnos, literalmente. Daycare centers. And my wife was not working. Well, she was helping me in my business, but she was not working in an outside job. So she stayed at home and took the telephone when people called. And so the children could stay at home until the age of five. I sent my children to a British primary school, a very small school. And so they started when they were 5 years old in kindergarten. But in any case, so in 1988, my son was still at home. He was 3 and 4 years old during that year, and my daughter was 7 and 8. And she was attending a British primary school. Although my children were very American in their approach, they adapted to the British style okay. Yes. And me, what was I doing? I was working as usual. I had probably about 40 or 50 teachers working for me. And as I told you last week and the week before, my two most important clients by far, con diferencia, were John Deere Iberica, tractors, and Ericsson, the Swedish telecommunications company. I think in that year, my third most important client was Fosfórico Español, which is a fertilizer. Ácido fosfórico para fertilizantes. All right, y ácido superfosfórico. It's a very interesting company with a large plant, and still today, a large phosphoric acid plant in Huelva. You know that there, Huelva is an important city in Spain for the chemical industry. La industria química, sector químico. Because originally, going back many years before the death of Franco and before, the Sahara Occidental was Sahara Español. El Ayun was the capital, and the Spanish Sahara between what is today Morocco and Mauritania was a Spanish possession and very important for phosphates, fosfatos. Very, very important. Even today, it's still very important. The two most important countries in Africa for phosphates, I believe, are, the Western Sahara, ex-Spanish Sahara, and Togo, near Nigeria, down where the African coast turns eastward. And so it was natural for the factories that were based on phosphates to be located in Huelva, because it was very close to sail from El Ayun, to sail north between Morocco and the Canary Islands, and then continue up to the Spanish coast. And the closest was Cadiz and Huelva, but Cadiz is an island with limitations, of course. But Huelva was perfectly situated. Although it's dangerous, in my opinion, because that area of Spain is prone to tsunamis once every 300 or 400 years, because there is a fault line, una falla geológica, in the Atlantic, about 200 or 300 kilometers off the coast of Portugal and Spain. If you remember, I think it was 1759. Yeah, 1759. What year? I think it was. What year was the great Lisbon earthquake? Lisbon earthquake. Earthquake is terremoto, which included a tsunami. I think it was 1759. No, 1755. The great Lisbon earthquake occurred on November 1st, 1755. Now, if you know, November 1st is Dia de Todos Santos, All Saints Day. And so everybody was in the church. It was in the morning. It was one of the deadliest and most destructive earthquakes in history, with an estimated magnitude of 8.5 or 9 on the Richter scale. The disaster was followed by a massive tsunami and widespread fires, devastating Lisbon and other parts of Portugal, Spain, and North Africa. It had profound effects on European philosophy, politics, and seismology. Yeah, remember that even Voltaire, the French philosopher, spoke about Lisbon. It was a big, it was a traumatic shock for all of Europe. And it happened on a religious morning, All Saints Day. And so Huelva, Cádiz, were also affected by that. And so in the future, these factories that are located in Huelva and other edifices and constructions along that coast are not well. The probability or the likelihood of a tsunami is very, very remote, of course. But it happens maybe once every 500 years, so you never know. Nunca se sabe, in English, se dice, you never know. But in any case, that was my third biggest client at that time was Fosfórico Español, a very interesting company. I remember I was giving class to the chairman of the company, an excellent person, very intelligent, and a very good person, Juan Manuel López de Azcona. Very, very brilliant, a brilliant man. And I remember that that company, a lot of the business was with the Soviet Union and with India. And to the Soviet Union, which at that time included Ukraine, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, and etc., they had large, vast lands for cultivation, and they needed ácido superfosfórico. And I remember that my student had a very good relationship with the Russian, well, the Soviet embassy in Madrid, and he traveled once or twice a year. Well, he traveled about once a year to Moscow, and Russian experts from the Ministry of Agriculture and Industry traveled to Madrid from once a year, so they had a good relationship. I remember one morning I walked into his office, and on opening the door didn't open completely because behind the door there were several cases of wine, cajas de vinos. And I said, oh, there's a lot of wine. Said, and I looked at the case, and it said Vega Sicilia. I said, wow. There were about 7 or 8 cases of Vega Sicilia wine, which is among the best wines in Spain and in the world. And each case contained 6 bottles. I said, wow. Who are the lucky people who are going to receive these cases of wine? And my student, the chairman, said, oh, my friends, our friends from the Ministry of Agriculture of the Soviet Union. And I said, wow, I've never tried Vega Sicilia. And he said, well, take one. And he said, Azucena, his secretary. She came in, and he said, remove one of the cases for our English teacher. And so after that class, I went down to my car, placed a case of 6 bottles of Vega Sicilia in the trunk of my car, and then I drove to Getafe or Leganés to continue my working day with my other clients. But later that evening, later on Saturday or Sunday, the following weekend, I was able to try Vega Sicilia for the first time. And of course, it's a very good wine. Spain, the wine in Spain is excellent. The wine in Madrid, too, Vino de Madrid, is excellent. Red wine everywhere, red and white and rosé. Spain, for me, is maybe the best producer in the world of wine. Most people would not agree outside of Spain, but I've drunk a lot of Italian wine. French wine, California wine, Australian wine, Chilean wine, Argentine wine. And I prefer Spanish wine. Yes, I think it's the best. But of course, I'm much more familiar with Spanish wine than I am with all of the different options of Italian, French, Australian, Chilean, or Argentine wines, and other countries as well. But there are many, many areas now when wine is very good. But I have to take a break. I'll be right back.
Si has sufrido violencia sexual, llama al 900-599-316. En el Centro de Crisis 24 Horas de la Comunidad de Madrid te ofrecemos atención psicológica, asistencia jurídica y apoyo social. Siempre disponibles para ayudarte. 900-599-316. No importa la hora ni el día, estamos siempre para ti. Campaña financiada por la Unión Europea Next Generation Plan de Recuperación Gobierno de España. Comunidad de Madrid.
¿Tienes previsto un traslado? Elige Estebaranz, porque no todas las mudanzas son iguales. Rapidez, garantía y seriedad, nuestros mejores argumentos. Mudanzas y guardamuebles Estebaranz, a tu lado transportando tus ilusiones.
Abuelo, quiero trabajar, pero me piden mil cosas digitales.
Apúntate a los cursos gratis de Madrid Aula Digital. Yo fui el otro día uno.
¿Tú?
Claro, aprendí a evitar fraudes en internet y hasta manejo mejor el móvil. También hay cursos para ayudarte a encontrar empleo.
auladigital.comunidad.madrid. Me inscribo ya.
Proyecto financiado por la Unión Europea. Next Generation. Plan de recuperación. Gobierno de España. Comunidad de Madrid.
101.3 y 106 FM. Onda Madrid.
Hello again and welcome. We're back for our second segment of today's, well, Sunday. Every segment I do, well, every program I do is Sunday. So I can't say today's Monday edition of Madrid en Inglés or Tuesday edition, no. Sunday. Maybe someday. Someday. Algún día. No domingo. Someday. Maybe someday I will have more programs. Who knows? You know, I remember many years ago I was in an English, I was giving class to a group. And I was asking different silly questions, absurd questions. And one of the questions was, will the Queen of England die someday? O sea, la Reina de España, ¿morirá la Reina de España algún día? And I remember one of my students said, well, he said, maybe or maybe not. I said, ¿cómo? What do you mean? The Queen of England is... will live forever? He said, no, but she could die on a Saturday or a Friday. I said, no, I didn't say Sunday. I said, someday. Algún día, no domingo. Someday, Sunday. All right. Aquí ahora digo someday, con M, algún día. Maybe someday I will have a program on other days which are not Sunday, like today. But I enjoy giving a radio show on Sunday. And so people are starting to discover this program and to take advantage of it and to listen to it in English to improve their mastery, to improve their command of my language, English. I'm from Texas, and I don't have a Texas accent. However, if other Americans listen to me long enough, if they listen to me talking for 1 or 2 minutes, they say, are you from Texas? I say, yes, because they can tell. But you need to listen to me for 2 or 3 minutes to, you know that I'm not from the North. I'm not from the Northeast. I'm not from California. I have a Midwest pronunciation or accent. And then you can catch me on a few words. For example, bolígrafo. Escrito pen. Pen. I don't say pen, I say pin. Pin, como si fuera y latina, que es alfiler. Pin. Can you give me a pin? Can you lend me your pin? That's pen. Y Benjamin, Ben. It's not Ben. I say Ben, como si fuera una... How do you say? Cubo de la basura, Ben. The rubbish bin. The British say rubbish bin. The Americans say trash can or garbage can. But in any case, here we are together for our second segment of today's Sunday edition and only edition of Madrid en Inglés. 1988. How old was I in 1988? Well, most of the year I was 37. No, 36. ¿Qué digo yo? I was 36 years old. That's a good age. 36 is the perfect age. I mean, imagine that God comes down and says to you, and says, Paula, Inés, Juan, Pedro, Manolo, Richard, I have good news. Oh, well, very good, God. What is the good news? You are immortal. ¿Cómo? Yes, starting today, you are immortal. What do you mean? Well, what does immortal mean? Well, immortal means I'm not going to die. That's correct. Do you mean I'm going to live forever? That's correct. Wow, God. Wow, thanks a lot. Thank you very much. I mean, I can't believe it. I'm going to live forever. I'm not sure if I want to live forever, but I certainly appreciate the gesture. Sin duda aprecio el gesto, el detalle de darme la inmortalidad. Santo Padre. And so he says, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thank you very much. And then God says, by the way, in addition to this, you can choose the age. You're going to live forever. And you can live forever as a 5-year-old, a 10-year-old, 15, 25. You can choose the age you want. And you'll live the rest of your life at that age. All right. So I would need to make a decision on what age I want to live the rest of my life as. Fijaos que pongo como al final. ¿Cómo a qué edad me gustaría vivir el resto de la inmortalidad? ¿A qué edad? I can choose to be 40 years old for the rest of eternity or 50 years old for the rest of eternity. So I have another question. Excuse me, God. Yes? I mean, if I choose age 35, I remember that at that age I had to work a lot of hard work. Yes. And my current age, no, I'm semi-retired. And what would be the situation? If I choose 35 or 36, like, then what would be the rest of the activities of my life? And God said, don't worry. You can live the rest of eternity as a semi-retired individual, and you can choose whatever age you want. I would probably choose the age of 50. Well, you know, it's interesting. I also have a third question for God. It says, excuse me, God. If I choose the age of 36, I will then have the mentality and the intellectual capability and the, let's say, the impressionability of a person who's 36. People who are 36 are not as wise as people who are 66. If I have to make this choice, I prefer to be 66 because I possess greater wisdom and understanding of life. If I'm going to live until the end of time, if I'm going to live for eternity, I prefer to be 66 than 36 if by being 66 I possess greater wisdom, sabiduría. And if God says, yes, that's true, if you decide to live the rest of your life or the rest of eternity at the age of 36, it will be with a mentality and brain capacity of a person who's 36. In that case, I would choose probably 60, the age of 60. I think at the age of 60. To tell you, you know, what's interesting, I've lived a very long life. What was the best decade? From birth to age 10, that was a good decade for me. I had a lot of fun. A lot of fun. From age 10 to 20, It was a very productive and very a lot of fun. From age 20 to 30 was incredible. 30 to 40. You know, the most productive decade of my life. Although you need to define the word productivity. But the most productive decade of my life was from age 50 to 60. And I think for most people, it is as well. If you're working on your own, if you're working in an organization, I'm not so sure. But if you're independent and you're your own boss and you have the good luck of possessing good health, I think from age 50 to 60 is the most productive. Because you've learned so much that it gives you the self-confidence to move forward. And you still have the energy between age 50 and 60 to achieve a lot of goals. In many cases, your children are grown or almost grown. So you don't have the drag or you don't have to channel your energy toward raising children. It's a good decade, the best for me, from age 50 to 60. And if you have really good health, age 60 to 70 is also very good. And even 70 to 80, by the way. I'm still very, very busy. I'm still doing a lot of stuff, a lot of cool stuff. But in any case, 1988, I was 36. My children, I was 36 most of the year. I turned 37 in November. My children turned, 4 and 8 respectively. And my wife was born on April 1st. Día de los Inocentes. De los Santos Inocentes. No, Inocentes, porque no hay nada santo del 1 de abril. Bueno, hay santos. I don't know what the... But you see, in most of the world... El Día de los las Inocentadas, and these are on April 1st, not December 28th. December 28th, really, in my opinion, Spain should move that celebration of Inocentadas to another date, because December 28th is a tragic day. La muerte de miles de inocentes. And so really, I don't agree with using that day for funny things. And in the English-speaking world, I think in many countries, I don't really know. How many countries celebrate the concept of April Fools on April 1st? I don't know. Quite a few, I believe. The concept of April Fool's Day is celebrated in many countries worldwide, though the traditions and names may vary. While it's difficult to pinpoint an exact number, the tradition is widely recognized in at least 50 or 60 countries. Okay, countries on April 1st. The United States, the United Kingdom, Canada, France, Italy, Germany, Spain. Mm-mm-mm-mm. April Fool's is not common, but Spain has its own version on December 28th. Okay, yes. All right. How many countries celebrate this day on December 28th? And we'll find out. The Feast of the Holy Innocents, celebrated Spain, Mexico, Guatemala, Latin American countries. So, I don't agree with that. Yes. Why do they celebrate with pranks on such a tragic date, historically? It's an interesting question. Why? The Feast of the Holy Innocents on December 28th is rooted in the biblical story of King Herod's massacre of innocent children in Bethlehem. However, the prank tradition that accompanies this day has a more cultural and historical evolution. Nevertheless, if I were the King of Spain, I would propose to the Spanish government and to the legislature, to the parliament, to change it, perhaps to April 1st, because for me the 28th of December is a tragic day. But in any case, interesting approach. Most Spanish people don't realize this. But getting back to 1988, what was happening in 1988? In Madrid? I don't know. Well, Telemadrid. In 1988, the regional government of Madrid, the province or Comunidad de Madrid, they appointed a management team for the creation of Telemadrid, the public television channel and radio. And this set the stage for the first broadcast, la primera emisión televisiva radiofónica, in 1989, but I'll talk about that maybe next week. All right. So the decision was made to create Telemadrid in 1988. What else was happening? Well, completing, I think 1988 was the completion of important points along the M30. You remember the Avenida de la Ilustración in the north of Madrid, in the area of La Vaguada. It was common at that time trying to connect the M30 and to make it a loop, una circunvalación completa. That was still during the 1980s, during the González period. I think Joaquín Leguina, who was the president of the Comunidad de Madrid in 1988? I think it was Joaquín Leguina. He was for a long time, up until 1996. Joaquín Leguina, yeah. He was the president of the Community of Madrid from 1983 to 1995. And who was the mayor? Let's see. The mayor of Madrid was Juan Barranco. Ah, yes, I remember. Juanito Precipicio, as some people called him. I'm not socialist, but I think he was a good mayor. I mean, Spain is a rich country in many ways. Probably the most important source of revenue for Spain, of course, is its tourism, because the money comes in from the outside. Spain doesn't need to generate this type of... It doesn't need to generate the money. The money is generated outside and comes to Spain in the pockets of tourists who leave a lot of that money in Spain. Now, of course, Spain needs to build an infrastructure to accommodate 100 million or 95 million tourists. And so there is a necessary investment in Spain. But the money, it's like exports. I mean, the money is the foreign tourists. I don't know how many come in. How many foreign tourists visit Spain every year? You see. And quite a few foreign tourists visit Spain every year. But in 2024, 94 million international tourists visited Spain. And how many in 2024 visited the province of Madrid? You see, and there'd be quite a few, of course, quite a few, I imagine. And we'll find out. Almost 9 million. 8.8 million people visited Madrid. And Madrid, the Madrid city, of course, is 3.9 or 4 million. But I have to take another break. So I'll be right back. Don't go away.
Restaurante J, cocina vasca, un referente de buena mesa en Chamberí, con la sencillez y honestidad de la cocina de siempre, donde comer bien, sin tontunas, con familia, amigos, tu cuadrilla, verduras, guisos de temporada y pescados salvajes al centro de la mesa. Restaurante J, una cocina para siempre, a 50 metros de la Glorieta de Bilbao. Reserva y disfruta.
Los sonidos electrónicos en Onda Madrid tienen un nombre.
Wally López.
Wally López, la factoría, de lunes a viernes, de 1 a 2 de la mañana.
Abuelo, quiero trabajar, pero me piden mil cosas digitales.
Apúntate a los cursos gratis de Madrid Aula Digital. Yo fui el otro día uno.
¿Tú?
Claro, aprendí a evitar fraudes en Internet y hasta manejo mejor el móvil. También hay cursos para ayudarte a encontrar empleo.
auladigital.comunidad.madrid. Me inscribo ya.
Proyecto financiado por la Unión Europea. Next Generation. Plan de recuperación. Gobierno de España. Comunidad de Madrid.
101.3 y 106 FM. Onda Madrid.
Hello and welcome back. Welcome back for another last segment. I only have about 11 or 12 minutes left, but that's enough time. That's enough time. So Madrid, last year, according to ChatGPT, which I'm looking at, received 8.8 million international tourists. That doesn't include tourists from Santander or from Malaga or from Badajoz or from Vitigudino or from Berrocalejo or from Albalate de Zorita or from, you know, Escariche, Escopete or Pezuela de las Torres, okay, which are a lot of, I know a lot of villages around Spain. All right. But in any case, I could spend an hour naming small villages from Cadaqués to Arcos de la Frontera. Yes, from, you know, from Almería to, from Cabalgata, Finisterre. All right, all doing it all. But in any case, fascinating country, fascinating city, Madrid. But 1988, what was happening? What was happening? Well, a lot of things in the world, a lot of things in Spain. Spain was preparing for the Summer Olympics. In 1988 were the Olympics in Seoul, South Korea. South Korea, you know, the Korean Peninsula is divided into two different countries. North Korea, Pyongyang, is the capital. And in South Korea, the capital is Seoul. Now, remember this, because Spanish people usually pronounce it Seoul, which is the Spanish pronunciation, but it's not the English pronunciation. And if you say Seoul in English, people will not understand what city you're referring to. It's like Sol, como el Sol, la luna y el Sol. Seoul, South Korea. The Olympics, the Summer Olympics, took place in Seoul, South Korea in 1988. And it was interesting. The only thing I really remember was that Carl Lewis, you remember the sprinter? Sprinter means velocista. The American sprinter lost in the 100 meters against the Canadian Ben Johnson. However, within a few hours, it was proven that Ben Johnson had been taking performance-enhancing drugs. Performance is rendimiento. Enhance is realzar. No realizar, realzar rendimiento. Drogas para realzar el rendimiento. We say performance-enhancing drugs. And he was disqualified. So, Carl Lewis, once again, was the world champion, the Olympic champion, in the 100 meters. He also, I believe, who won the 200 meters men's event in the 1988 Olympics. I think it was Carl Lewis, but I'm not sure about that. Maybe he didn't run in those. The winner was Frankie Fredericks of Namibia. Look at that. Yeah. Yes. Did Carl Lewis participate? I don't know. Yes, Carl, he participated. And he competed in the 200 meters alongside Frankie Fredericks. However, Lewis did not win the gold in the 200 meters. He finished second place behind Frankie Fredericks. But very close, because Frankie Fredericks ran the 200 meters in 19.75 and Carl Lewis in 19.79. 4/100ths of a second. All right. Incredible. In any case, that was the Summer Olympics. I don't remember how Spain did in the Olympics. Yes. And as I said, Juan Barranco was the mayor, and the Spain was benefiting in 1988, as usual, as every year, from the influx of millions of tourists. Spain has a special blessing, which is very good weather, very good temperatures for the end. Most of Europe doesn't. Once you leave southern France, the weather becomes much less stable. And of course, in Great Britain as well, Ireland, Germany, Switzerland, Austria, then Belgium and the Netherlands, Denmark and the Scandinavian countries, Sweden, Norway, Finland. So Spain, Italy, Greece, and Turkey, and Portugal, in addition to Morocco and Tunisia, are the main destinations for European tourists. However, Italy is more expensive than Spain. Greece is a smaller country, and the infrastructure is not as nearly as complete as in Spain. Portugal is also a small country with good infrastructure, but much less in extensive nature than in Spain. Turkey, the southern coast of Turkey along the Mediterranean, is very nice. But again, and of course, Tunisia and Morocco. Spain is by far the most, let's say, attractive country for Central and Northern European people for their vacation. They can go to the Balearic Islands, Mallorca, Ibiza, Formentera, and of course, Menorca. Although the winters are not very pleasant. And then, of course, they can go to the Canary Islands any time of the year. And so Spain has the advantage of having, it's the only country in Europe that can accommodate tourists in the winter. And they go down to Fuerteventura or to Lanzarote, to Tenerife, or to Gran Canaria, or to the other islands, Hierro, Gomera, y otro, Palma, or La Palma. And so they can go there. So Spain is ideally, and Spain has a long, long coastline. Excuse me. Spain has a long, long coastline, both in the north of Spain, which is usually quite humid and wet, but it's very, very attractive and very nice. It has beautiful beaches along between Cadiz and Tarifa, and nice beaches even up along Huelva and up to Isla Cristina in Ayamonte, in that area. And then, of course, we have the Costa del Sol, the Costa Blanca, the Costa Brava, the Costa no sé qué. I mean, it's really, really nice. Spain is a country that's ideally suited for tourism. And the food's good. Although I think many, many tourists from abroad don't take the time to learn about Spanish cuisine, because the cuisine from every area of Spain is good. Madrid, for me, the city of Madrid, is one of the places where you can enjoy some of the best cuisine in the world. You have outstanding Oriental cuisine. Of course, outstanding cuisine from every area of Spain. Galician, Asturian food, Basque, Catalan food, Andalusian, Extremadian. And food, of course, from the mesetas, you know, from the food from Castilla La Vieja. You know, you have very good beef, very good pork, very good lamb. And you have very special dishes like migas, you know, these things. Of course, you have these in other countries as well, but in Spain, it's an art. Last Monday. I was interviewed in front of a group of about 150 people. And we were on stage, myself and another man who asked me questions, and I answered the questions. The last question, the final question in front of 150 people was in Spanish. He said, ¿Cuál es tu plato favorito español? And I said, torreznos. Everybody laughed. It's not necessarily true. I love torreznos, pork rinds, but it's not necessarily my favorite. It's impossible to say what my favorite is, because there's so many. You know, the typical paellas, fabadas, but then you have incredibly good rodaballo, very good lubina, very good dorada, very good, you know, merluzas and, you know, hake. I don't know the English name of them. Hake is merluza. Cod is bacalao. You know, you have different ways of serving it. But then you have the migas, and you have the cordero asado, you have chuletas, the cordero, you have juice, and then you have the pork. So many different ways. And then you have the Andalusian food, the pescadito frito. Probably my favorite fish, pescado, is acedillas. Acedillas sin H, acedillas, which very few people in Spain are familiar with. And also, you know, it's not common to see acedillas in the restaurants. If you want acedillas in Madrid, sometimes you have to go to Mercamadrid to find it. And I think usually they sometimes call them lenguaditos, because it looks like lenguado, miniature lenguado, miniature sole. Lenguado is sole, escrito sole. But it's delicious. It's delicious. And so in Spain, fish is an art. It's very difficult to eat poorly in Spain. It's very easy to eat very, very well. Even in normal economical menus del día, you can find pollo la sidra. You can find incredibly good stuff. But again, I'm running out of time for today. It's been a real pleasure. I'll be back next week. Si Dios quiere. God willing, I'll be back next week. So take care and thank you.